So, I mean, with the latest record, then, I mean, I'm interested to know is you work with a lot of session musicians and things, and it seems like your lineup. I had a look at the list of how many people had actually been in your band on Wikipedia, and it's like an essay in itself.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering, like, when you're recording the albums, to what extent it's just you kind of, you know, overlaying stuff and doing kind of.
Seriously, I mean, like, you know, there's a give and take about this. Having come into this at 43 years old, you know, it wasn't a bunch of friends who met at school anymore. You know, it was kind of like musicians who had families and things. And it's been very difficult to keep a lineup together. That's, you know, because we don't go way back together. We're not sort of kids who met and rehearsed in the garage when we were younger. Those people, for me, gave up music and moved on. So I had to meet new people. And my lineup's changed a lot. And that's usually because of people's commitments to other things, where they live, what happens to them in their lives, whether they decide to carry on playing music beyond 45 and all that kind of stuff. And it's meant I've had to work through a lot of different musicians and collaborators. Some have been around for a long time and some who haven't. But the thing is that what it actually gives me is fresh blood. It brings new ideas in. Because although I write the music, I do not sit there saying to the bass player, I want you to play this, 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 and this, and this, like that. No, do it again. That's not what happens. I want them to bring something of themselves to the proceedings. So what I say to them when they ask, well, what do you want, Andy? I just say, well, I've done a demonstration. Here it is. I'd like you to do something like that and keep the flavour. Otherwise, be your own person, you know. And consequently, people bring things to because, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm pretty good at writing the thing, but, you know, they've got a much better idea of how their instrument can work with it than I have, and they can drastically improve the piece. Of course they can. So yeah, we do get a kind of band atmosphere going, and when you actually hear the records, most of them do sound like the musicians are all sat together in a recording studio together somewhere in Wapping, but as a matter of fact, we're all in just different home studios around the world, you know, and that's it, you know, we can be anywhere. We were one of the first embracers of internet technology. In fact, my previous band, PO90, we claimed to have put the very first promotional MP3 on the internet, full stop. We actually did it on the day that MP3 conversion software was released. It actually took 17 hours to make the MP3. And it took a further day to load it up to the internet. And the first person who downloaded it took 3 days to download it and then didn't know what to do with it at the other end. So we had to tell them what to do because there was no such thing as an MP3 player, even on a computer. They had to convert it back to what's called a WAV file, and then they had to play it. And that took them 17 hours to convert it back to a WAV file. So, you know, we were in there pretty early, mate. It's a bit long. It's a long time before Spotify, is that? And the tangent, you know, we started using our computers and sending each other mails and MP3s back in 2004. We used to send a fair few hard disks in the post then and stuff, rather than sending massive great big reels of tape, which made it a lot easier. But by the time we made the fourth Tangent record in 2008, we never even had to burn a CD. The entire thing was done during the internet, and the final CD was sent to Germany by email. You know, we didn't have to even burn one. I mean, I hardly ever use my CD burner anymore now. It's just all goes straight digital to the pressing plant and things, even when we do the vinyl. So that's it. And it's, you know, it's a great way of doing it. We really enjoy it. So I enjoy working with different people. I've got lots of musical friends. I've got a few enemies. And, you know, that's how it all goes. You know, it's just like being in any other band, except a bit older.
So with the album then, I noticed, I think it's the first track, you've got things like the beeps from Radio 4's Today programme. And, you know, I suppose a lot of kind of found sounds, as it were, and I was just wondering to what extent you kind of search out sounds for your albums, and or whether it's just, you know, you think, right, I need a ticking clock or something, I'll go and record one.
Well, I mean, I try to do my own sounds and my own recordings, yeah. I mean, see, I've got a field mic over there, you know, record ticking clocks and traffic and all that kind of stuff. The pips are actually off the PM program, but pretty good. But the DJs are two DJs, are friends of mine, who put together a sort of fake breakfast show for me in their little radio studio in London. I think the only sounds that I just got from somewhere else altogether might have been, I think there's one of the traffic noises where I just couldn't get enough cars hooting all at the same time, and I managed to find an already made one on the internet, but I was looking for it, that particular kind of sound. There just weren't enough cars hooting in Leeds. You need a foreign town for that kind of thing. So, you know, it was just, that's the only really found sound I used. Mm.
Okay. So, I mean, with performing then, I mean, if you kind of have members across the world and, you know, you're kind of very much in the digital thing, I mean, how does live performance work?
Well, in the past, it's worked quite well. I mean, you know, essentially, you know, we work like a... We work, for example, in the same way as Take That or Beyoncé would work, you know. I mean, Take That, I've got musicians, you know. They're not members of the band who are always hanging around with Take That, you know. In fact, one of them's in a prog rock band. And essentially what they do is they book the tour, the dates and the rehearsals and everything like that, and professional musicians turn up and do the job. Beyoncé the same, you know. And that's basically what it is for me. I just, you know, I book the tours, book the musicians that I want to use, and they put it in their diary and they turn up like anybody else who's going to do a job, you know, and we enjoy it very much. You know, in the past 10 years we've been able to successfully tour Europe 4 times. We've done festivals right across Europe, from Sweden down as far as Spain, through France, Germany, Belgium, Italy and all that lot. Did a beautiful one in Parma once, and that was fantastic. We've played in America, Canada, and we've done a small tour of Russia. You know, it's been quite an amazing experience, you know, seeing all these places. Russia particularly was a really amazing experience. Because, you know, the huge distances involved in Russia, and doing it by bus was absolutely incredible. We got on really well with those guys. Except everybody told us we needed warm clothes, but it was really hot everywhere we went, even though it was winter, because they have all the heating turned up everywhere to 23 degrees centigrade. So it's just hot everywhere you go. So we ended up sweating a great deal. Yeah, it's an amazing thing to do this. And the reason why I suppose it's unusual is that, you know, at my age, most people who are still in music are doing it because they've had all their hits and they're on their comeback tour, you know. Me, I'm still working towards it, you know. And there aren't many, most of my fellow people of my age have, you know, given up, just aren't playing anymore. They're ex-players, or perhaps they've got a little band that plays a few cover versions, or they're big stars and, you know, they're finished, you know, and all they have to do is turn up at Glastonbury or wherever it happens to be. Me, I'm still working my way very slowly up, but not so bothered about it, you know. I'm actually just enjoying making the music. We've got people who listen to it. I just wish there were more.
Mm. So where is your fan base then? I mean, who listens to The Tangent?
Who listens to well, I mean, of course, anybody who wants to. For the most part, the people who seek us out do tend to be a more mature audience. And, you know, I don't see anything wrong with that at all. I think that the way the media sort of like segregates people into sort of like young, hip things and has-beens is, you know, tantamount to racism in my way of thinking. You know, it's ageism, which to me is no better than sexism or racism or any other kind of ism that's bad. A lot of our fans are kind of aged between, you know, 35 and 65. A lot of them have bald heads. A lot of them are men. We tend to find that there are more women and younger people when we play abroad than there are here. The people abroad do tend to have a more open mind about music than we do in Britain. We're also sort of BBC-ified over here. The BBC are a terrible force on popular music, it has to be said. They don't do anything to broaden people's horizons at all. And, you know, bearing in mind that their manifesto is supposed to be educate, inform and entertain, they manifestly do not do that. They just give people a diet of the same, and consequently it's possible for a 17-year-old person to go through life without ever having heard any classical music, any jazz or anything. They will just hear what Radio 1 gives them 24 hours a day, what they think they want, because they have been told by Radio 1 and the BBC and the whole of the kind of mass media that follows the BBC around that this is what you listen to. Now, it's not the same in France, it's not the same in Germany, because of the fact that there is no national network of radio stations that are telling everybody what they have to do. There's much more choice, there are more real alternatives, and people in France and Germany and most of the European countries have much more of their own mind to make up about what kind of music they like, and you can quite happily find somebody in a queue to see, you know, the Sugar Babes one night and probably Black Sabbath the next night, or another, you know, or a metal band. For example, when I was living in France, there was an enormous interest in France in Japanese rock music, you know? And you know, Japanese bands were coming over and touring France and doing exceptionally well, but stopped at Calais. They didn't come over to us because nobody over here was interested. You know? And that's because they'd made their own minds up about who they are, and I think that, you know, we need to get a little bit more of that, you know, and also, you know, try to drop this crappy generation gap thing, thinking that people who are older like boring old music and dads, and, you know, it's insane, you know. I mean, like, when I teach my kids at college, I shouldn't really call them kids, but when I teach my students at college, you know, to me, I'm always getting this kind of, you know, they have to pay to come to college. Me, I get it free. They teach me just as much as I taught them. I mean, you know, half the reason I know about more modern bands and things is because they've told me about it, and I can, you know, get into it and listen to it and things, and because it's all contemporary music. That's my whole thing, you know. I actually think Glenn Miller's contemporary. You know, you might think, how is Glenn Miller contemporary? He's been dead for 40 years more. But the thing is, he is contemporary because my mum used to listen to it. My mum's alive, so it's contemporary music. It's in her head, you know. So I don't think music's gone until the last people who listened to it have gone. You know, so it's all still alive, really. You know, Pistols, yes. Emerson, Lake and Palmer, the Beatles, Nirvana. You know, Razor Light. You know, all still happening. And that's good.
So, I mean, I suppose going forward, then, I mean, 20, 30, 40, 50 years time. I mean, what do you want the legacy of the Tangent to be?
I think the thing I'm proudest of is the fact that, you know, we're just a normal bunch of people who just want to do something a bit more involved. And we did all this independently. You know? I mean, we have got a record company, but they're not huge. And you know, that nobody said we had to do it. We could have got away. You know, I mean, I spent 2 years writing this symphony, and all I was doing is fulfilling a contract that said I have to write another album of songs. Right? Well, I could have just written an album of songs, couldn't I? I mean, I could have done it in 4 weeks, but I spent 2 years on it, and it's because I'm bothered. You know, I actually am bothered, and I kind of spend an awful lot of time listening to it back and trying to listen to it in a way that I appreciate it from somebody else's point of view rather than just my own. So I try to work out where people are going to get bored, what am I missing out here, you know, where I want to try and keep people's attention in the music. I don't want minds wandering off. And I sometimes think, you know, because I am critical of my own preferred musical form, prog can be very self-indulgent. Prog can just sort of like, just be sort of like, you know, some guitarist thinking, right, okay, I'll just play for 20 minutes now, and everybody can watch how fast I can play. To me, that's, you know, being a prog fan, everybody assumes that, you know, you're just like listening to 20 minute long guitars. So I hate it. I absolutely hate that whole thing, you know. I mean, you know, it makes me understand exactly why those people went to see the punk rock bands, because they didn't want any of that shit. They just wanted to, you know. So, yeah, my pieces are 20 minutes long, but they're not full of a 20 minute long improvised guitar solo that goes nowhere. Everything is going somewhere. Everything is progressing. That's essentially it.
Okay.
The most important thing, the reason why I'm here, the reason why I do this is to go back to something else that we spoke about earlier, is that I am probably one of the people who genuinely believes that music can be the central item, that music doesn't have to be the soundtrack for something else. It can actually be the main focus of attention. And I think that people in the past 40 years haven't really had the opportunity and been presented with something that belongs to them, you know. Sure, you can go back and you can listen to The Rite of Spring, or you can go back and listen to Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, and of course that's great. And you can go back and listen to Tubular Bells, and that's great. But the fact is nobody's had one of these for a very long time, you know. And Mike Oldfield belongs to a different generation now, and my students haven't had the privilege of a Tubular Bells for their own generation. One that was written about the time they live in now, in 2007, not back in the 2013, but not one that was written back 40 years ago in 1973, because Tubular Bells is 40 years old this year. And I think that, you know, it would have been really nice if somebody from the younger generation had written it, but it hasn't happened, so I just thought I'd do it. And you know, so I'm trying to give a kind of Mike Oldfield Beethoven experience to a load of people who have not been given that. And they've not been given it because the record companies and BBC and the media companies haven't bothered to sort of like reassess. John Peel's famous remark about progressive rock music was, you know, it's everybody knows the quote. It was about Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and he described it as a waste of talent and electricity. Yeah? And the BBC have essentially taken that as a kind of de facto policy, when all it was a kind of off-the-cuff one-liner by a DJ. And to build their musical outlook on a one-off, off-the-cuff one-liner by a DJ is not a good way of representing music to the people of the country that they're supposed to be serving. So, you know, that's what I'm doing. I would like to reboot the idea of music at the centre rather than on the soundtrack to something else. That's basically what I'm about.
Would you be able to show me some of your equipment?
Yeah, of course, no problem at all. Essentially, I have a reasonable variety of keyboards. Over here, this is a stage piano. It's not wired up or switched on at this particular moment, but like it's a stage piano. And up here, this is a complete what you would call an analog synthesizer. This is based on, it's a modern version of things like the Mini Moog and the Prophet 5. It's an absolutely excellent synthesizer, this one.
There's a lot of knobs there.
Yeah, actually, I mean, the thing is that actually, with synthesizers, the more knobs there are, the simpler it is to operate. I know it sounds like a bit of a strange thing to say, but you do have a lot of programming to do with a synthesizer if you want to play it. And if it's all done in menus, the menus look simpler to start with, but eventually they become a lot more tricky to use. You know, you have to sort of like go, I want patch number 55, I want to turn the cutoff down a little bit, and thank you, that's what I want to do. Whereas on this, you just do that. Done. Right? You just need to know which one you want to turn, and it's very easy to learn. And over here, this one is working. This is my 1960s vintage Hammond organ, which is my pride and joy. I consider myself primarily an organist, influenced by people like Keith Emerson, John Law from Deep Purple, Stevie Winwood, and many others. It's a very ballsy and good rock and roll instrument in general, you know. It's a fabulous piece of kit.
So what's this here? What's is this?
That's an award I won, actually. That's an award I won from the Classic Rock Society. And they gave me it as a surprise award for an outstanding contribution to music over the years. There you go. So you're like, yeah, you never heard of me, but I get awards. I was surprised as anybody else, I have to say, but it was a beautiful moment to get it after many years of just working in this industry, it's nice to know that there are actually bodies out there who have managed to thrive without the support of mainstream media, and that there are a lot of people who are into this stuff, to know that. Over here, this is that's my Leslie there, which is a rotating speaker for the organ. Actually, in there, there's a speaker going round and round. My trusty acoustic guitar, on which I write my songs very badly, and my two flying V-style guitars, which are essentially for fun, making a lot of noise and posing with. Basically it. And on the top of that, that's my amateur radio equipment, which is nothing to do with the music, but I'm very interested in communications, always have been, which of course is why I was such an early adopter of the internet, and I can talk to people in Australia on that, using that large pole I'm in the garden.
Okay. So is that ham radio? Is that
ham radio, as the Americans call it. We call it amateur radio here. Okay.
So I suppose then, if people are interested in getting into your stuff, where should they start? What would you recommend as a kind of easing you into the tangent sound?
It depends what you're into, for example. If I would say that what we've just made is probably the most successful thing we've ever done musically. I know that's the standard thing for most musicians to say when they've just released a new record. I would counter that by saying there have been times I'm on record as saying, no, this new one is not our best. because I'm completely and utterly honest about it, and I'll point out my own faults. Like, I'll tell you straight up, I don't think I'm a very good singer. I do my best. I do my best. And I think it's important that I sing, because I think the way I say the words is because I write them. I think it's good to have the person who wrote the words saying them. And this, for this reason, Bob Dylan is the only person who really matters to sing Bob's songs. Of course, other people can do many successful cover versions of Bob's songs, but a lot of people don't like Bob Dylan's voice, but, he's a crucial, crucial, crucial writer. And, so I've kind of followed his lead and thought, he couldn't sing very well, so I can have a go, and that's it. I would say that you'll probably find my vocals more tolerable on the new record than on previous ones. It's not an album that's going to give you lots of hit singles to listen to, but none of ours are. They're all about asking you to work and work with the music and enjoy it and get into it and let us take you somewhere. And that's really what it's all about.